This Sunday, I would like to speak to you about something that I should have spoken about before, but it's not been a good year, and that is the elephant that is in the room, and that is the forthcoming election, and what lessons us as Christians have to learn, and also how we approach this. Because I have not spoken to you about it before, and please understand that the guidelines that pastors receive from the bishops of the United States is that in elections, we're not allowed to favor any one candidate or another. And we're not allowed to favor either party. What we are to do is to help people think about being Christian and Catholic, not just when you come to church, because being a Catholic is about making the kinds of decisions that you think Jesus would want you to do. And that's not just here in the church. That's in your daily life, and it includes political life. Now, what I'm going to say is just a little overall, but I have one main lesson that I want to get across. First of all, let me put one baby to bed, okay? And that is that whenever I speak about this, there's a group of people that get very angry about the issue that why am I not separating church and state? And what you have to remember is that the separation of church and state is not the separation of religion from public life. There's a big difference. When the founders put on the amendment that says that Congress shall make no law regarding an establishment of religion, what they were thinking of was the example of England. In England, you had to be part of the Anglican Church. Otherwise, it was illegal, and you could actually be arrested and killed if you were not part of the Church of England, because they had the established Church of England. And the same thing went for different countries. In Germany, it was the Lutherans. In Holland and in many of the northern countries of Europe, it was Calvinists. And so the founders did not want any one church to be the Church of the United States. But they weren't talking about the fact that religion should be banished from political issues. We can't do that. And the reason we can't do that is because, see, politics is the answer to one question. The way the great philosopher Aristotle said, politics answers just one question, and that is, how should we live together? That's it. What are the rules? We're going to live together in cities and in groups. So what are the rules for how ought we to live together? And the disciples of Jesus don't want to monopolize politics, but we want our voice, because it is a democratic society and we're citizens, but we're not just Americans, we're Christians. And as Christian Americans, we have a right to be at the table making those choices, or helping to make those choices and making our voices heard in the dialogue. That's an essential part of our work. It's not just me and God. It's us and God in all the areas of life. So that having been said, why haven't I said something before? Because what? We're 3 days away from the election? Sometimes I wish it would just be over. But why haven't I said it? Because I have been, and I still am, confused. I am not just confused. I am disillusioned. And it's about that disillusionment that has taught me something. And it has taught me something that I think I want to pass on to you. Now, the question is, why am I disillusioned? I am, by nature, a kind of a amateur philosopher and amateur theologian. And so I think in terms of what's the best, well, how could we do this the best, what's the ideal? And you know, most of you know that I am an immigrant. I am originally from Havana, Cuba, and I came to the United States when I was 10 years old. I really love the United States of America. I am a naturalized citizen, and knowing that first time I am a Christian, I really believe, I think it was Winston Churchill who said that democracy is the worst kind of government except for all the others. And I agree. Because you see, in this world, and this is kind of the lesson that the disillusionment has helped me to see. Nothing will ever approach the fulfillment that we seek of the perfection or the ideal of how we want to live together. Now, let me back up a little bit here. Why am I disillusioned? I just told you, I can't talk about either Hillary or Trump. Right? I'm disillusioned because I first hold the ideal of what we're supposed to be, of the American democracy. And I'm disillusioned because the choices are, for me as a Christian this year, are not, neither of the two are attractive to me. Both for different reasons. I am afraid of one, I am abhorrent of another. Some people, one candidate has policies that I really don't mind, another candidate policies that are okay. One candidate has policies that I cannot live with. Another candidate scares the bejeebies out of me. And either way, come Wednesday morning, I'm not going to be a happy camper. I'm not. Okay, I'm going to be either scared or a little bit despairing. Now, that's the source of my disillusionment. Okay, the source of my disillusionment. But the issue here is that I would like to put forth to you is what has the disillusionment taught me? Because the disillusionment has taught me something that I consider to be very valuable. And that is the renewed understanding of the difference between optimism and hope. That there is a tremendously big understanding, difference between being optimistic and being hopeful. So first let me deal with the optimistic. Now, what is optimism? And when you listen to the news, the news is telling you that a very high percentage of the people of this country think that we as a country are heading in the wrong direction. Okay? I think that that is the percentage is something like 70-80%, something even like that, of the country is not in a good mood. And so we're not optimistic. And people want to be optimistic. But there is something that we need to learn, and that a theologian that I highly respect, he's passed now, he's dead, was a Jesuit, his name is Karl Rahner. And Rahner has an article on something he calls Christian pessimism. Christian pessimism. Now, at first, you might say, why would a Christian be pessimistic? Well, because you see, optimism is based on the hunch or the expectation that things will go optimally, thus optimism, that they will go the best way that they possibly can go in this world. But the Christian, according to Rahner, the theologian Rahner, is the person who understands that even in the most optimistic outcomes of anything, nothing in this world will ever fulfill the hope that we have of life and of happiness with God. That this side of death, we cannot constantly think that our times are always going to be turning into the best that they can be. Look over history. You know, I was thinking about that when I was listening to the first reading. And this is happening, 1,000 years before Jesus, that a Greek emperor takes over the Holy Land. And his name was Antiochus Epiphanes. And Antiochus Epiphanes wanted the people of Jerusalem and Israel to become more civilized. The Greeks were the secular progressives of their time. And they wanted wanted the Jews to be like them. And so they began doing, by government fiat, they began saying, you're going to do this and you're going to do that, like all power-hungry governments do. And the emperor at that time, Antiochus Epiphanes, says, not the emperor, the governor of that area, said, you Jews, you have to prove that you are civilized and you will eat pork. Now notice what happens in the first reading. Because the first reading is about a mother who has 7 sons. And the 7 sons are told, if you do not eat pork, you are going to be tortured and you're going to die. And the mother is forced to watch. And what you hear in the reading is the 7 sons and the mother confront a very horrible situation. You talk about lack of optimism. This is not just pessimism. This is facing the final. And what they do is they basically say, we are first subjects of the Most High. And second, we will do the best we can to integrate with the society that we're in. But notice where their first allegiance goes. They're in not just disillusioned like I am or anything like that. They are facing death from totalitarianism in the face of the Greek emperor. where do they make their stand? They had to learn what was their first allegiance. And their first allegiance is, even in the face of death and of destruction, they put their hope in God. Notice, they can't be optimistic. They gotta be pessimistic. But it is a holy kind of pessimism. It is a pessimism that says, we will do the best that we can to have things turn out good. But even when they don't turn out well, our hope is ultimately not in government. Our hope is in God. And that kind of lesson is something that I think is important for us. You know, I was thinking, the other one I was thinking about is my favorite saint. My favorite saint is St. Thomas More. St. Thomas More lived under King Henry VIII in England. And St. Thomas More was one of the few people who resisted Henry VIII when Henry VIII made himself the head of the Church of England. And Thomas tried not, he refused to do that. You talk about being pessimistic about the ultimate pessimism of his own circumstance. He had to face it. He could not be optimistic. And yet he had to face the pessimism by giving his first and foremost allegiance to say, things are not going well here. I don't know where they're going, but my first allegiance is to God. And I love what he did before he was the guillotine. No, probably not the guillotine. He was executed by an executioner with a hatchet, taking his head off. And he stood there about to have his head removed. And he looked out at the crowd and he said, today I die the king's good servant, but God's first. I die the king's good servant, but God's first. And so what happened is he acknowledged what is called Christian pessimism. That at that moment, government could not fulfill any promise for him. And what did it happen? What did he do with that? He didn't allow himself to go bleh. He turned and reminded himself of the foremost allegiance that he had. Now, that doesn't mean that we retreat from the political arena. We don't. We continue working for the best outcome for our country to the best of our abilities. Each one of you, when you go to vote, if you haven't voted already, you have to stand before God in your conscience. In my opinion, I am not happy about either candidate. Okay? I am not. But we have to make a choice. It's either or. Or you vote for a third party, which I guess you can do that. But you have to make a choice. But to make that choice, remembering that our first loyalty and our first hope is not on this earth. That there will be times that things will be going better, and things that times will be going worse. But our time here is short. And ultimately, you have to keep your eyes on the kingdom of God. You know, a good theologian friend of mine once said, politics participates in the modest dignity of the penultimate. Now, I love that saying. The penultimate is a word that means it's not an issue that resolves ultimate questions. The penultimate is the secondary tier. And he said, politics, and listen to that because it's a great sentence. Politics shares in the modest dignity of the penultimate. What is the ultimate? The ultimate is, did Jesus rise from the dead? And he did. And that he is holding for us our city. Why? Because we are primarily citizens of the New Jerusalem. That's who we are at the core. We are here on this earth, and we are the servants of the United States of America, but God's first. And that has to be our identity. And I guess that is how I'm approaching this year, as a lesson to remind me of who I am. And that good times will come and good times will go. Bad times will come, bad times will go. History continues doing this. But you can't, as a Christian, allow yourself to be either high on a political regime or low on a political regime. We participate, but we don't depend on that. We live it, but we're not yet at home. You know, for example, do you know why we call these places parishes? You know, when you say you go to St. Cyril's Parish, the word actually means a parokoi in Greek is a temporary tent of a traveler. And the very fact that the Catholic Church calls these structures, as permanent as they look, that it calls them tents, reminds you that you're not here for long and that you are first and foremost a citizen of the New Jerusalem, and that is where your first allegiance lies. And so, come Wednesday morning, whatever happens, we continue doing the best we can to be good citizens of the United States, to be Christian, and to contribute to the common good, because that is our vocation, to contribute to the common good. But never tie your horse to the government, ever. No matter how good or how awful, whatever, never tie your horse to that. Always tie your horse to the fact that you are a citizen of the New Jerusalem and first and foremost a servant of God. That's all I've got.